This episode is sponsored by CoachingForPastors.org. At CoachingForPastors.org, we help pastors reverse the years, lose weight, get fit, and feel great. Not through a fad diet, pills, or supplements, but by actually learning and living the habits of a healthy lifestyle. If you need help, don't wait another day. Check it out for yourself at CoachingForPastors.org. That's CoachingForPastors.org. Welcome to episode 335 of the 200 Churches podcast.
Like you mentioned a second ago, Jeff, it's not about size and butts and seats, but it's really a lot about people. But it's also about making a people who love Jesus more. And if your church ends up becoming a healthy church of 25 people who have a vibrant and living faith in Jesus, and they celebrate him on a weekly basis and share their meals with one another, and they are Acts 2 to a T, that is the most successful church you can have.
Welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. Now here are two guys who are definitely better together. Friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches podcast. My name is Jeff Cady. I'm here in the digital and video and audio sound studio with today's podcast partner.
I'm Jake Trueberg.
Jake, good to have you with me.
This is
an official audition, is it not, to replace Johnny?
It is. I really appreciate it. Listen, my talent coordinator called me and wanted to make sure that he has been notified of his departure, make sure that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, good to have you on. Jake, a lot of our listeners don't know you yet. So, and some of them right now are thinking, holy cow, is Johnny really being replaced? I actually get people texting me when I joke about it, right?
Yeah, so, no, I'm definitely not replacing him whatsoever. I'm just filling in for this short span, and I'm really honored to be here and to talk with you guys about, you know, what it's like to be a bivocational pastor.
Hey, did you work today?
I did. I did my 40 hours today at my company, and the best part of my day was, you know, getting in the car and rolling the windows down and driving home.
There you go. And so what did you work on today? Like every day you might work on something different maybe, but what was it today that you worked on?
In my field, the thing is that making sure you keep everything running. The business I'm in requires you to be keep your systems up and running, because if you don't, then millions of people are impacted by it. So most of what I did today is just make sure things are running as they're supposed to.
Okay, so like what are the things? Okay, are you allowed to talk about it?
I can talk about generally what they are.
Yeah, generally.
So they're just computer systems. You know, making sure that none of them are experiencing any errors, or making sure there are no things that are impacting performance.
Performance of like what?
Well, the systems themselves. So
yeah, the systems that do what? Like, what do they support? What's the industry?
Entertainment.
Oh, entertainment. Now we're getting a little deeper into it. Like what type of entertainment?
Television.
Television.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now all of our curiosities are piqued, but you can't go that far, can you?
Can't go that far.
But hey, but when we stop recording, you'll give me the skinny on it, won't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, okay. So if you call Jake Fearberg, he's in the Denver area. He's the pastor. What church are you the pastor of?
Harvest Community Church. We're in Aurora, Colorado.
Aurora, Colorado. He can give you the skinny on the entertainment systems he keeps up and running during the day. Amen?
Amen to that.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Jake, you've got a couple kids.
I do.
What are they up to? How old are they?
See, my oldest is a freshman at Colorado Mesa University, which is in Grand Junction, which is on the western slope of the Rocky Mountains.
Beautiful, beautiful place, isn't it?
It is. And she's always wanted to go to school at a really warm place, and now is regretting going to a school at a really warm place. She keeps telling me how hot it is. And then I have a 12-year-old who's a seventh grader at a middle school close to our house.
All right, man. You got a seven, and he's a boy?
No, he's got two girls.
Oh, you got two girls. Okay.
Yep.
Man, I hear that seventh grade for girls is a rough time. The girls can be very snipey, and with social media and all that stuff, it can be very difficult.
It can be. My youngest, it's not such a big deal. She's not on social media. She has a phone, which is kind of ubiquitous for most people nowadays. Wasn't a big deal. Like with my oldest, it was at that age.
But exactly.
For her, it's not that big of a deal. And she has a really good, close-knit group of friends who really support her. Of course, there's always those weird pre-teenage girl things going on. But
yeah, I had one girl, and then I had three boys. So the three boys flushed the memory of having a girl out of my head.
Yeah, my sister is the one who has my middle sister has three boys, and they're all, almost adults now. So I don't know. I don't know which I would have preferred more, the girl. I think girls, because they don't break stuff.
Absolutely. And the boys, there's crumbs. There's things growing under the bed. They're all jacked up with testosterone and steroids and everything. And all their clothes are sweaty and wet and gross. And their cleats are filled with mud. Just all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. For girls, it's a whole other set of stuff.
So, hey, you were kind enough to record with us tonight because you've been a listener for quite a while. Jake, honestly, as we sit here right now, I don't even know how you and I got connected.
Oh, I do. I remember. I forget what show it was. I think I instant messaged you and I said, hey, if you ever need a show idea, I'm a pastor of a small church and we partner with another church and we coexist in one strip mall space. So if you're ever interested in that kind of a show, let me know.
Okay.
And so when you popped up, I went, oh my gosh, just how in the world did this? Cause it was like a year, 2 years ago, something along those lines. So I think that's what it was.
I'm a little slow on the uptake, you know, Jake.
Don't sweat it. Here's the thing. I figured you are a pastor of a church. I think you were probably in the transition to moving to a new spot.
Yep.
You do this show. You're a father and a husband and grandfather.
Grandfather.
Right?
Now.
So,
yep.
Yeah, those kind of things from unknown people throwing you strange ideas usually get put into the circular file.
Well, get it. There was a guy. What was the guy's name? He's from Rio de Janeiro. Pedro. You remember Pedro? I think we had
Sounds
him
familiar.
On two times. Pedro sends me an email and basically saying, hey, if you get me on your show, I'll be the greatest thing since sliced bread. You really ought to put me on your show. I think it was an email. And in the email was his phone number. So I called the number from my office. I didn't know it was actually his cell phone in Rio. And he answered, and he was shocked that I just called him on his cell phone as he was walking down the street. And we ended up, he came on for two episodes and we've been connected with him now. Great guy.
Right.
Church, you know, just doing wonderful stuff, real innovative stuff there. Facbook and our Facebook group, I'm so embarrassed and ashamed, humiliated actually. We don't do anything with that Facebook group. And I'm not on Facebook. I don't really know how to check the ins and outs of some of these messages that get sent. I'm a little slow on the draw on that one. But I happened to see yours and I thought, and I've seen your name. I've just seen it on Facebook here and there. So I knew that you were connected with us somehow. But anyway, we didn't talk in the recording. We didn't talk about your partnership with this other church.
Right.
So just describe that for a little bit, because we got to the end of the recording and Johnny said, I don't have time to do an intro. So I said, well, Jake and I can do the intro and you're willing. So this is the intro. But in the intro, describe your partnership in this strip mall space with another church.
Yeah, we had Harvest for the majority of its existence has been a mobile church. And so we'd always, showed up at a school or a library or something along those lines and basically unloaded, set up. Tore down, packed up, and rinse and repeat. So 11 years of
wow.
Our almost 15 years of existence was mobile.
And you kept everything in a trailer?
Yeah.
Wow.
The guy who was who towed the trailer for the longest time, he built these custom carts that held all of our sound equipment. They held everything in there. We had a guy who was coming to our church who every day rode the bus to his job. The guy, the RTD or the regional transit bus guy, his driver, was also a bivocational pastor.
Wow.
And so they got to talking, and the rider said, who was at going to my church, said to the driver, he says, "Hey, you should meet my pastor. You guys should talk." And so that became, that's when I met Jim, who is the pastor of the church that we partner with.
What a crazy story.
It's divine, in my opinion. And so he and I became friends, and we just started hanging out. And once a month or every couple months, we'd have coffee at like 5 a.m. because he had to go to work and I had to go to work. And we'd have and just sit there and talk about, you know, commiserate about life in a small church. And they had had another church meeting in there with them. And he called me and said, "Hey, listen, they're leaving. Would you guys consider coming in and sharing this space with us?" And so I took it to our church, and because of our polity, you know, we're congregationally run, and we voted on it, and they said, "Yes, we don't want to do this mobile thing anymore." So I think it was about 4 years ago we moved in. We have half of the strip mall to ourselves, and we share the main worship space. And for the most part, I think it's been good. At least for it's been good in terms of not having to tax our people as much anymore. They can just come. But there's always odd things that go on. Like, you know, we meet at 10:30, they meet at 9. So our churches are passing each other, and we have to get in there, get plugged in, get ready to go really fast. And so there's some, you know, roadblocks or obstacles around that. But we've kind of lived somewhat symbiotically for several years now. So that's kind of how things started and where things are.
That's cool. Well, Jake, you provide Johnny and I with an excellent episode that's coming up right now. So thanks for doing this intro with me.
You bet. You guys have a good one.
Here's our conversation with Jake Fearberg. It's me and Johnny and Jake on the line. Jake Fearberg, welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. It's good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Johnny, the three of us are conferencing together. We can see each other. You with your your long, luscious locks, and Jake with his shiny cap, and me with my golden fuzz.
It's thinner than it once was, but it's still there.
Quite thin, quite thin.
Your hair is like the Amazon. It's holding on, but just barely. Hey, that's topical. That's topical.
More tropical. Jake, you've got to tell us a little bit about yourself, and especially about the part about how long you've been a listener, because that's intriguing to me.
So I'm Jake Fearberg. I am the husband of Jen, my wife. We've been married almost 25 years.
Holy cow, Jake. You look like you're 28 years old.
Oh, you're too kind. No, I just turned 46 in July. Okay. So yeah, I got two kids. One's Isabel. She's 18. She's a freshman in college. And then I have a 12-year-old daughter also who is in seventh grade.
I'm the pastor of, I guess it's, call it a micro church. We really don't. It's just a church. we have 25 people at the moment, and I've been there for 7 years. I've been listening to the podcast for like at least five years. I think I've listened to everything you guys have put out, with the exception of some of the weight loss things, because I'm really thin, so I didn't need that.
Speak for myself.
That's real talk.
Speak for myself, Jake.
That's real talk. So what brand, that's the question I like to ask, as rude as possible. What brand is your church?
Yeah, we're Evangelical Free Church. I inherited inherited the church in a sense from the previous pastor who was called to go to another church. Since we're in Aurora, Colorado, which is kind of on the southeast side of Denver, and he was called to a church up in Longmont, which is about 25 miles northwest from here.
Gotcha. So are you a bivo pastor? I mean, what do you do besides pastor?
My 40-hour-a-week job is I've been in IT for 23 years. The other 2 years, I was actually a youth minister for a year and a half, 2 years, at another church in Phoenix, Arizona. And then when that ended, I went back in IT, and I've been in IT ever since.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, I tell you what, it's a means to an end.
Sure.
And I'm coming to a place now. I'm 46. I'm coming to a place where I'm like, oh, great. What's next? What do I really want to do with the rest of my life? It's that second half of life's sort of stuff that I'm starting to wrestle with now.
And so you said you just started at Denver Seminary?
Yeah, I completed my summer course, which was my first course in seminary. And then I'm in my fall semester right now, taking a course on how to get the most out of seminary, and then a course on therapeutic communication, which is fun.
Okay.
I probably should have taken the course on how to get the most out of seminary.
No.
I feel like
the course on how to get anything out of seminary, Johnny.
You're not wrong, Jeff. You're not
Jake,
wrong.
Jake, you got to jump on me, though. See, Johnny, I was 47 when we first met. Jake's only 46. Yeah. He's way ahead of me.
He's way ahead of me.
So here you go. You're going to find a guy. He's going to be like 23 years old, total live wire, and he'll come in and he'll have all sorts of new ideas. Your church will hate it. And then he can wreck everything for you. That's the story Jeff knows well. So I think that'd be a real joy for your life.
No. We kind of had the opposite of that. We had the guy who everybody loved, and then he left and the whole thing fell apart. And then I came in, we're like, all right, let's do some new stuff. And they're like, we like the old guy.
That's always great. Don't you love being after the guy that everybody loved? That's just the best.
But I in all honesty, he and I are still really good friends. In fact, I meet with him probably once every couple months. We have a pastor's group from all around the state of Colorado that meets for mostly for spiritual formation and, you know, supporting one another. We get together and he's part of that group. And so I get to see him all the time. And you know, his daughter and my daughter both are going to the same college. So he and I still have this really good friendship. I'm really grateful for that. So no disparity on him whatsoever.
No. I want to make something of this, though, because Jeff tomorrow, by the time this airs, it will have been last week. But Jeff tomorrow is going back to Orange City, where we worked together for the 75th anniversary, which is awesome. I love the church. I wanted to go. Things have come up and I'm not going to be able to go. But what happens, I really do believe, is pastors are at a church and everything is not perfect and everybody is not nice and everything is not great. And then that pastor leaves. So, Jeff, you were there 15 years. And in everybody's memory, we loved Jeff. Jeff was the best. Jeff was so great. And like this new guy, Tim, is there and he's got to listen to everybody talk about how great Jeff was. Secretly, everybody gave Jeff a hard time. So how do we, like, as pastors, I guess this is the question, how do we like live with that? Do you ever talk to the old pastor of your church about that? Like, hey, everybody misses you. And he's like, actually, they treated me like garbage. I mean, is that like a conversation that happens?
I think it did early on. I think after the first year or two, you know, I would go in and talk to him because it was still the relationships that he had with the congregation were still fresh. It's not like he had just, you know, faded. People still remembered that. So where we are today is a lot of those relationships have moved on. So a lot of those people who had deep relationships with him have since moved on to other churches and have become involved in other congregations. And so those that were, in a sense, loyal to him and to his initial start in the church have since gone on. So we really don't have that much lingering.
Yeah.
Remembering. I think if something would happen and the church would undergo a problem where we needed to close it and we wanted to have one of those memorial services, I think then that would come up. But we're not in that place, so we don't have to worry about that as much.
Jeff, do you remember when I got to Dover, there had been a youth pastor before me, Chris, and everybody loved Chris. And within a year, I told you, I can't hear this man's name. And Chris is a good guy. Okay. If he's listening, I got nothing against Chris. But I thought, I can't listen to another word about Chris. Like, I'm trying to do my own thing. Jeff, do you have that? You're in a church for 2 years. I think about Dover, right? Probably because it's on my mind. But is this a real thing? And how do pastors deal with always being under, and especially now, because the past will always be better than the present, because we're in a present where church attendance is down, giving is down, everything's down. How do we like deal with, oh, remember when Pastor, you know, Jill was here? That was a real pastor in my church. I don't have anything wrong with her. I shouldn't have used that name. But I'm just saying, like, how do you deal with that kind of talk?
Well, first off, I want to officially apologize to Jill. We do respect her ministry.
She's wonderful. I should never have used that name.
Yeah.
That was a terrible choice.
So
for me.
I think that most pastors understand this, that, you know, and Jake, you understand, the ministry is not about us. You know, it's not about us. It's about the people in the church. I was at a meeting today for lunch where we had three of our church members there. We had two district officials at the table with me and my associate pastor. So there were seven of us. And the district guys wanted to hear from our members. But they posed the questions where any of us could answer. I didn't say a thing. And I let the members talk. And they gave some really good ideas to these guys. And they were kind of, you know, they were drawing it out of them. But it's, you know, it's not about us. It's about the people. So that hopefully the day comes when we leave and the church really, you know, I think every pastor wants this, but so few get it, where the church actually can continue until they find somebody else. And it's not a big disruption because you haven't made the church so dependent on you. And Jake, I think with you, when you and I talked, share what you told me about how most of the people in your church are involved in the ministry. I think you mentioned that they were, and a lot of them are involved in the worship team, but a lot of them are serving, unless it was another pastor I was talking to. I think it was you.
It was me. One of the hallmarks that I dig about Harvest is that it bucks the trend of, you know, 10% of the people do 90% of the work. In our church, it's 90% of the people do 90% of the work.
Yeah.
I could not have done this and been the pastor of this church had I had to do everything from preaching and worship team and children's and youth and the finances and all of those things. There's no earthly way that I can do this on my own at all. And especially in this really tiny church context, everyone has a place. Everyone has something that they do, whether it's teaching the little kids, whether it's serving meals at Denver Rescue Mission, you know, organizing all that, whether it's doing the finances, everybody has a role. Nobody is unimportant at my church. I mean, that you can't find that in a larger context. You won't find that generally speaking. You'll find people who...
Not that percentage.
Right, not that percentage. So you can imagine a church of 25, we got 20 people doing stuff. We had some new guys come, which is a nice treat for us because it's rare. But we had some new guys come, and they kind of were chuckling to themselves while they watched us on the stage going, I can't believe they have more people up on the stage in the worship team than they have in the congregation. For me, I don't see that as a deficiency. I see that as a badge, a real honor. You know, I serve with a lot of really great people. They love serving. We've often joked that we're kind of like a SWAT team, that we just go off and you know, we hear a need, we go, we do. I'm really blessed. I mean, I don't mean that in the trite sort of, you know, way of saying it, but I'm really, I'm super blessed to have all these people who support me and really support the mission of the church.
Well, you work 40 hours a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah.
So they don't see you as the guy with the job and you've got to do it all. And do you interact with other bivocational pastors very often?
No. In my context, in my district, have not met another bivocational pastor that is just content being a bivocational pastor. The church planting methodology is to take a church plant and go and build it up to the place where the pastor can be full-time. That's the methodology that's used. And I get that. I understand it. But for me, I have not met a single other bivocational pastor that does what I do.
So how does that make you feel? Like, how do you deal with that? Do you feel like an outlier?
Oh, most certainly. And pretty much all the, our association's conferences, not to disparage them, because what they're doing is doing what they can for the majority of the people in the district. But for the most part, I'm an outlier. And so a lot of the things that they preach on, or a lot of things that they teach for the majority, doesn't really have a whole lot of application to me. You know, when they have a conference on you know, sabbatical rest and or taking a sabbatical after 7 years or something along those lines, I'm like, I get 2 weeks a year, you know, at my job. And so I'll fit in vacation as I can. You know, I'll build up a Sabbath habit as it goes forward in other ways. Again, I think professional ministry doesn't know what to do with bivocational people.
That's true. I think that's true to the point where there are churches and there are pastors who should be bivocational, and they're not. And the church has, and this was like my dad, the church has a parsonage and $10,000 a year. And they're like, that's good enough, right? Like, we might, we have listeners right now who are living in parsonages and making pennies on the dollar, and they should be in a bivocational situation, but their church is like preventing them from doing it. So what's the upside? I mean, tell me the upside of being bivo, because you've been doing it now for 7 years.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about these listeners who are in that kind of situation where it's like, there's no money. There's maybe a parsonage, maybe not, but the church doesn't want them to get another job. What would you say to that church? What would you say to that pastor about being bivocational?
I think for me, there's great freedom in it, meaning that I don't have to worry about stepping on, you know, Susie churchgoers' toes as much. Not that I'm going to be a jerk in my preaching or anything like that. but there's a sense where I'm like, I'm here at the whim and the beck and call of God here. And so I can be a little more free in proposing ideas and doing things. You know, if I say, oh, hey, there's a need to go do this thing, I don't have to run through a gajillion committees to get it done. And I know that my livelihood is not resting on whether or not I've offended somebody because of the thing that I want to do. So for me, there's a lot of freedom in that. I also know that my family's taken care of, especially in times of, you know, like for us, we're a church, we're a tiny church. We started out, you know, when I was there, we had like maybe 100 people. And over the years, it's just kind of declined for various reasons. And I know that I can still serve as a pastor, because my income is not based upon church attendance and church giving.
Right.
So for me, there's freedom in that. I mean, there are downsides to it. You know, I can't go meet with people for lunch as much. I can't do the things that professional ministers and pastors can do.
Right. Is pastoral care hard when you're a bivocational pastor? I'm thinking funerals. I mean, that stuff happens on Tuesday afternoon. I mean, is pastoral care a difficult area, and how do you manage that?
I've been really fortunate that we haven't had too many things, but I'm also in a place in my job that I have a good amount of flexibility to be able to go and take that time.
Sure.
I guess that's one of the nicer things about having been in a secular job for all of these years. You know, I've built up seniority in all the places I've been. So I have that freedom, or have that leniency with my employer to go do those things. So yeah, for pastoral care, you just find other times to do it as well, non-traditional, out of pocket times. But it's also nice for them, because for most people that I minister to are already working. And so I have to fit within their time frame as well.
So, Jake, how have you interacted with our podcast over the years? Because I remember there was a time when Johnny and I realized we really aren't talking to bivocational pastors.
Right, absolutely.
And we really should talk to more bivocational pastors. And I think it was a time when we had one as a guest on the podcast. But how have you interacted with the content, and what have you enjoyed, and what has there been lacking?
I have really enjoy. Well, here's what I think. Tudor Church's podcast for me was a saving grace, and this is why I say that. When I first started out, I had this idea that a successful church meant I had to have a lot of people in the seats, and to do that, I had to follow all of this advice from these amazing communicators and follow all of their things. And if so, then, you know, it's kind of like church prosperity gospel. If you just sow a seed, you'll get amazing results. And I went, yes, I'm in. Here's my this and here's this, and we're going to do that. When I started listening to you guys, I realized, you know what? I'm okay. There's nothing wrong with having a small church. There's nothing wrong with having a tiny church. There's nothing wrong with that, with any of it. You guys honestly gave what I do value. So for those guys out there and gals out there who are listening and who are going, oh my gosh, like I got like 20 people. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, this podcast, I think, will give you a little bit of hope that it, like you mentioned a second ago, Jeff, that it's not about size and butts and seats, but it's really a lot about people, but it's also about making people who love Jesus more. And if your church ends up becoming a healthy church of 25 people of who have a vibrant and living faith in Jesus, and they celebrate him on a weekly basis and share their meals with one another, and they are Acts 2 to a T, that is the most successful church you can have. I'd want that all day long.
I just saw David Householder, friend of the show, and ironically, brother of Mike Householder, who has a enormous church in the town I serve in. Huge. I mean, giant.
Biggest church in the state.
Absolutely. And David Householder on Facebook says, are we small churches or are we New Testament sized churches? And what you just described, that's what I think, right? This is a New Testament sized church. This was the kind of church that Paul is writing letters to, that are opening up these correspondences, you know, written in Greek by Luke and reading them aloud around candlelight, you know, in their houses. I don't want to romanticize it because it's hard. And I don't want to make it sound like it's, you know, like it's all fun and games when you have 25 people together. There's conflict even with that. But there is something really beautiful about what you just said. And I appreciate so much that you would credit us, because we're idiots. But you would credit us at all with encouragement. Come
on, speak for yourself, Johnny.
Well, I'm an idiot at least. But I really do think pastors like you need to be encouraged, because I liked how he said that, New Testament sized churches. So I don't know if David still listens while he's driving out to the desert, but shout out to him for that. That was really, that was a good word.
Yeah. You know, our charter originally was to be a church of people where you knew that they were believers. And so I've taken that under my, I've taken it seriously. I've done my darndest to disciple the people and teach them what it looks like to live in an abiding relationship with Jesus. I model that. Someone has modeled that for me. And I've learned that over the past couple of years. And like I said, this podcast has been part of my daily or my weekly, podcast ingestion. I have, you know, I know when it's coming out. So I'm seeing, you know, refreshing the stupid iPhone going, I know it's coming. They're coming, right?
We've been bad lately, so I'm sorry for that.
Oh, it's no worry whatsoever. I just know it's coming. And you know, the nice part is that not everything is for me on each podcast. And you speak to certain people over the years, and they, you speak to their needs. Or at least you bring people on who speak to those people's needs. So maybe in some small way, there's some guy or gal out there who's, you know, got a home church and they don't have a sound system and they don't have this and that and the other thing, but they got a community of people who love Jesus and who love people. You got it.
Well, that reminds me of Walter Brueggemann. When we had Walter Brueggemann on, you're saying the very similar things that he was, that was emanating from him. And that is that it's about the gospel. It's about living out the gospel in a community of believers. And I think Walter's the one who pushed for the Eucharist every Sunday. Wasn't that Stanley? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Walter was the one who, when I said, how do you convince people to act like that? He goes, well, I'll tell them to go read the Bible.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is the greatest answer I've ever heard.
Actually, Howard Wass and Brueggemann are like some of my favorite authors altogether.
That was like...
Howard Wass kills me.
That was the best. The summer when we had both of them on, man, that was crazy. That was the best.
That was. You know, Jake, as you were talking about giving what you do value, my mind was just kind of going through my Rolodex of memories of carrying this big old junky mixer amp down the back stairs out of my office to this godforsaken little room in the basement.
The carpet room.
The carpet where Johnny and I would go down and record, because we didn't know what we were doing. We were just trying to get a good recording somewhere. And we'd sit down there and the stuff the places we went and the things we did just to record an episode, but always with the belief that there were pastors out there that were listening that needed encouragement. I mean, that's our mission, ministry encouragement for pastors of small churches.
Yep.
And that word encouragement was like everything to us, believing that there were so many pastors either short on or totally bereft of encouragement.
I go on the Facebook page or that for the small churches. I think Dave Jacobs runs it. And while I may not, you know, comment on everything, what is encouraging to me is seeing a whole group of people across the United States and the world who are in the same context that I am in. Bivocational or really tiny churches, 15, 20, 10 people. And yet those are just as valuable as the larger or the midsize or any context of church. Those are just as valuable. I think God equips certain types of people to be certain types of pastors and certain types of congregations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. And it's taken time though. And so, I mean, you think about, there's probably a bivocational pastor out there going, man, I wish that if I put all of this really highfalutin stuff in there, I'm going to be an amazing, you know, communicator, and I'm going to have my own podcast or mega church. I think if they focus more on what they're capable of doing or what they're called to do, rather than worrying about what they need to become or some other idea of somebody else has put in their heads,
right,
I think they'll be able to serve far better.
By the way, Johnny, you can't not like it because we're right in front of Jake right now. But when I talked to him the other night on the phone, I told him that we're going to have another whack at the plate at NT Wright here soon. And I invited him to join us on the call.
Oh, my word. Huh? That's awesome. That's
right?
Awesome.
That's what I thought.
I'm going to hold up my my Surprised by Hope book and just like have him air sign it.
You mean you don't get the chance to hang out with NT Wright all the time? That's like totally just Tom, right? His wife will be cooking something in the next room. It's not a big deal.
I'll bring up my guitar and he can play a song and I can play along.
Yes. We were there. We saw him do that. Me and Jeff were at a conference and watched him do it. It was amazing.
You know, Tom Wright had a book that I have. It's the only one. I have two of his books that I've been able to really enjoy. Obviously, Surprised by Hope. And then there was another one called, it was an Easter book that he wrote about. It's in my bookcase somewhere. Now I can forget the name. But I read it every Easter. And he talks about when he was a bishop, I think Bishop Durham, and he had a small parish at some point in a really poor town. And when I read that, for me, it gives me encouragement, because here's this, in my mind, like this superstar, educationally speaking, somebody who just gets Jesus and he understands these amazing things that I will probably never get. But yet he was a pastor in a tiny town, in a tiny church. And was faithful to it. I mean, that's encouraging.
He was on episode 200. And if you haven't listened to that yet, speaking to our listeners, all you need to listen to is the first 10 seconds. Well, maybe it's 20 seconds of that episode. It's the opening clip.
Oh, yeah.
Where he talks about, if you've got 15 people, hallelujah, you can do something with 15 people. And if you've got 50, praise the Lord. And if you've got any more than 75, well, then there's certain things you're going to have to do to break them up into smaller groups so that you can. I mean, just in that clip, is so encouraging to pastors. I mean,
with that soft voice.
Right.
You've got 15 people. Hallelujah.
Yeah.
I love it.
His fluffy English accent. That's right.
Oh, my gosh. Right.
Jake, tell us what your plans are now that you're going to seminary. And you've got. Jake and I have already had the talk, Johnny. His life is going by in a flash.
Right. I was like, what talk are we talking about here?
Like he's already got kids, Jeff.
Come on, you guys. Listen, I'm a religious figure here. I don't think about that kind of stuff. Jake's giving me the eyes.
I thought you also had kids.
don't get me started talking about kids and grandkids. No, we had to talk about how he's 46 and in the blink of an eye he'll be 66.
Why do you do that to people? You're mean.
No, you have to understand it. I've had this thought already.
Jeff's not 66. I met Jeff when he was 47. He's not yet 66. Come on. You got time.
Yeah.
So Jake, What are you thinking about? You just started a seminary. You want to do it in 5 years, 4 years, 5 years. And then what? Then what's going to happen?
Well, if all things go as planned, I'll probably move out of the IT field into the chaplaincy, full-time chaplaincy, most likely into a hospital setting.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a weird journey. I think in the past 3-4 years, as I've been meeting with some other pastors and talking about life in general and beginning to lament kind of like, well, what do I want to do with the rest of this life? Do I want to be in IT forever? Do I want to do, you know, the next thing, management, whatever it is? And this thought about chaplaincy just kept popping in my brain, and I couldn't remove it. It was like a worm. It just kept burrowing and over and over and over. And so I told my wife one day, I said, listen, I think God's calling me into chaplaincy, not at the exclusion of being a minister or being a pastor, but as a full-time job. I said, I need to go find out more about this. And so I went and interviewed a hospital chaplain. And I told Johnny this. I said, well, as soon as I walked into the hospital, I knew. As soon as I walked in, it felt like a priest walking into his cathedral. It felt like, this is where I need to be. So I applied to Denver Seminary within a week or two, got all my references in, and got all that stuff in, got accepted, and started my coursework in during the summer. So my hope, and things can always change, is to move out of IT in the next 5-6 years, something like that. At that point, our youngest will be in high school, or school, excuse me, will be in college. The oldest will be, hopefully not living at home. and then my wife and I can, make that downsize to it, so I can, undertake that, because I know that moving from an IT position into a chaplaincy role is significant in terms of finances. But I'm pretty positive. Well, I'm certain that this is where God's leading me.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Makes me think. I talked to John Otley on the podcast once, hospital chaplain. That was a fun conversation. No idea what episode that was, but my daughter spent a month in the hospital, and chaplains are important people. So that's really cool to hear, man. That's really cool. Jake, give us a final word. Give us a final word for small church, maybe even micro church pastors out there who are listening.
Hey, Jake, before that final word, I just got to say, in my class in seminary, we had a cohort of about a dozen of us. And at some point, we ran into this lady who was almost done. She was 67 years old. She looked like a grandmother. I can't remember her name. She needed to get her MDiv to be a hospital chaplain. And that's what she wanted to do in her retirement years. Wow. And so she was doing it at that age. And I've told this story before, but Johnny was in for a month with his daughter. I was in total for a little over a month with my son. And I remember a lady came in one time, and she looked like she would be pushing her cart through the produce aisle, getting stuff for her grandkids. And she walked she walked into the room. And she said, I'm so-and-so. I'm a hospital chaplain. Can I pray for Doug? Because she had seen the name. And I said, yes. She said, why is he here? And I told her. And she walked past me, and she walked over. She took his hand. I was already in tears anyway. But she prayed, and it was like an angel. And I'm not being melodramatic about it.
No.
For me at that moment, she was like an angel who walked in the room and cared. And she talked to him like he was awake and could hear. He was in a coma. And it just was, I'll never, ever forget it. And I said to her, you can stop in anytime and pray for him. And she stopped in one or two more times. Yeah. But, oh, my goodness. So, shot.
It's the power of presence. I think my district superintendent once told me that on my very first hospital visit. He said, people don't need to hear you say anything. They just need you to be the presence of God in that room.
Yeah.
And that's stuck with me to this day. So, as far as for small church pastors, the one thing I'd say that's been most helpful to me over these years is soul care. Learn to take care of your soul. too often we're just giving of ourselves constantly, either through spiritual care or preaching or a myriad of other things. But we neglect to take care of that part of us that that yearns to be with God. So I've learned how to pray again. I've learned how to be quiet, to be still. It's those spiritual formation aspects that I'm still learning at this point, but those have been so huge. So whatever you can do to find a group of people who are like-minded, who or find a spiritual guide, you know, and I don't mean that in the weird way, but I mean in a spiritual formation way.
Yeah.
But like my buddy Kevin, who's that for me, who knows how to pray, knows how to listen and to be okay in silence and to hear the voice of God. Those are the things that I think are most important.
Spoken like a true hospital chaplain, Jake. I like that. I like that. Well, with that, my dog is telling me she needs to go out, as you can see on the screen right now. And
nice dog.
But this has been a very fun conversation. I appreciate you coming on, and Jeff, you nabbed another one. You never cease to amaze me. You find these pastors, and they all have something awesome to say.
Well,
so.
Jake found me, and Jake, this has been great. And
a lot of fun.
You talked about Dave Jacobs, and I think about Dave, and he's shared some in his group of what he's been through in the last few years as he's led this group, and he hasn't shared other things. But here's a guy who has just dealt with some really serious stuff in his life, and at the same time is ministering to thousands of... Now, what is he up to? Is that up to almost 4,000 people in that group?
That thing that is, many?
It is. It's just
that's horrifying.
Exploded.
That's terrifying.
And he's kind of monitoring, and he's ministering, and he's now. Have you talked with Dave as a coach, Jake?
No, I haven't.
Okay, somebody I just talked.
I know what I'm doing, so. Oh. I'm kidding. Of all the people in the world, I could use like coaching all the
time.
That's
funny.
So.
That's funny. Somebody I was talking to recently just said they did, and I talked to him once a month. We spent an hour on the phone together. Anyway, Johnny, I interrupted you. You were landing the plane.
I was trying. You ripped it right back up off the runway.
Well, I think
so
it was the dog.
Nice. Thank you.
It was the dog making this cameo appearance again. Olive.
Everybody out there, I'm sorry that you had to have Jeff carry on. Jeff, we're not doing an outro for this. We'll just go back and do an intro. This is the outro. Thank you, Jake, for hanging out with us. Really helpful content, I think, tonight. Just encouraging stuff, man.
Yes.
Encouraging stuff. Like, you spoke to my heart, and I appreciate that. Jeff, it's always nice to see you, and we'll see you, our lovely listeners, next time on the 200 Churches podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to our weekly email at 200churches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back next week with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
You would think I would have figured it out by then. After 32 years of pastoral ministry, I had 4 adult kids, 3 of them married, I had grandchildren, a master's degree, and even a successful podcast. But I still hadn't figured out the weight thing. I was eating too much, exercising too little, and getting larger by the year. Approaching 300 pounds, I happened upon a health coach. And I made a commitment to have him work with me, and that was 1 year and 80 pounds ago. Pastor, if you're ready to actually start learning and living the habits of a healthy lifestyle, I want to encourage you, check out my story at coachingforpastors.org. I'd love to personally talk with you and have you experience the freedom I found, freedom to pursue life and relationships and ministry, and honestly, the best health of my adult life. Check it out for yourself at coachingforpastors.org. That's coachingforpastors.org.